Welcome to Christ in All Things, a conversation about meaning and purpose.
It's based on a verse from the Bible, Colossians chapter 1, verse 17, which says, Christ is before all things, and in him all things hold together.
Christ in All Things is a listening ear into conversations about receiving and giving the love and hope of Christ.
And these conversations are an invitation, because as you'll hear, as much as we enjoy having them, digital media operates from a distance, and that's not what's best for us, with God or with one another.
So, thanks for listening. And if you're in the neighborhood, we invite you to participate in person in the life that finds its epicenter at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 210 East Pleasant Street in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin.
Welcome back to Christ in All Things. My name is Pastor Jason Shockman.
And I'm Pastor Lance O'Donnell.
And with us again is Mimi Helmy Matilda Peterson Gable. The first episode, folks, if you haven't listened to it, is a joy. We want to pick it up, Mimi, with the next thing that really shaped you into who you are today.
Because just to recap, the first you said was your being the firstborn and the first American immigrant. So what's number two?
The fact that I got to know the man that I married at church. And when we lived up north, the pastor's sister said, oh, you're going to move to Milwaukee. Well, try to get on the, whatever they called it, northwest side of town. We know these German people that belong to St. James Church, and they have a son that happens to be the same age as your daughter.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And that's Wally.
Yeah, and that's what worked. We went to Mount Olive, and we went to St. James. And then when they went to St. James, they met Wally's parents and Wally. And it was a block away. I mean, why would you go 5 blocks if you could just go across the street and go to church? And we really enjoyed our years there. And I got very involved.
You were how old?
When I started ninth grade, so that would have been in 42.
Where did you go to high school?
Washington, in Washington High School.
Washington High School
in Milwaukee.
On the north side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sherman Boulevard.
Yeah.
At that point, it was the school.
Yeah.
And during the war, it was so jam-packed full.
Maybe we talk about this another time. I'm curious because you had a turn in a town of Germans. What was it like in World War II? What was it like being a German kid? Were there any issues for you?
Not for me, but there were, like, for my Wally's father.
Yeah,
who looked very
Teutonic.
Yes.
Okay.
And they questioned him, that they figured he was a spy of some sort. So he had a little trouble, but we were very comfortable. My parents away got back into their German groups,
you end up at St. James.
Yes.
Your family's become active.
Yes.
You meet Wally. You're how old at the time?
14, 15.
You're 14, and they were setting you up already up in northern Wisconsin before you moved?
Well, because
love Germans.
They knew about him in Milwaukee.
And how old was Wally?
Well, he was 3 months behind me.
Oh, just a little younger.
Just a little younger.
So they're trying to set you, yeah, you up when you're a freshman in high school.
Mm-hmm.
God bless them. Okay.
You know, I know people that still do that.
And
you might be married to one of them.
Yeah. And sometimes it works. So I, out of curiosity, you meet Wally, when did you know that was going to happen? You met when you were 14 years old.
Yeah, we belong to, what did we call ourselves? The youth group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a name of some kind.
Walter League or something?
Yeah, it wasn't Walter League, but that's what it was.
Or was Walter League the older yes. people? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was very active in that, and okay. so was Wally. We both belonged to choir. My parents became involved in the congregation, and we were happy campers. And then it was time to put Ruth into school, and
Ruth,
who's Ruth?
Our daughter.
Oh, your daughter. Well, no, you're getting ahead of us. Oh.
You skipped a whole bunch. When did you know you were going to marry Wally?
Shortly after I met him.
So you're 14, 15 years old. How old were you when you got married?
21, because we had to be, this was a Wally-ism. He was going to be his own boss. He was going to wait until he was 21 to get married, so he didn't have to sort of toe the line with his father.
Oh.
Which
yeah.
his father was a strict ganz Deutsch.
Gotcha. Okay.
He had lots of rules.
But we got along just fine. The parents got along just fine.
Yep.
And
But Wally had a very clear sense from the time he was a teenager that he wanted to be his own man and he had a plan.
And we would not
get
married.
I can see how that would be attractive.
Until we had our own house.
Oh, okay.
So we set out to have a house built and we slept in it on our wedding night. It wasn't quite done. And in fact, that day the furnace men had decided to work on the heating and had turned it off. And, well...
For your wedding night?
Yes.
Oh, good gravy.
And
it's their wedding night. I'm not worried about them being cold.
That's a perfect...
First of June.
It's a great story.
You know, it was cold that night.
Yeah.
Thank goodness we had our love to keep us warm.
I've got my love.
That's right.
So, yeah.
And you were born in 19 what?
28.
Born, or not, I should say married is what I meant to
50.
Ask. Married in 1950. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he was 21.
Mm-hmm.
You were 21.
Plus a little.
Oh, you were 22. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you said you're 3 months older.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you're roughly the same age. What is, and so he knew from when he was a teenager, he wanted to own his own business.
I think by that time, he was working for his parents.
Okay.
Because his parents had an apron company.
Okay.
His mother designed aprons. His father sold them. And then they went into dry goods. So Wally's first job was to be a salesman for the apron company. And as soon as, we did get married. And then as soon as we knew we were going to start a family, he said, I don't want to work for my parents. I want to have my own business. And he had been selling goods to Ben Franklin stores. And he said, I want a Ben Franklin store.
And he's 22-ish years
old. Well, I think he was 24. I know my boys still say they used to lay in the bedroom and say, can you imagine? Dad wants to open a store and run it himself. Which they thought was really something. And it was. We borrowed money from his parents and opened a Ben Franklin store. And 30-some years later, we went into Hallmark stores.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so... and that's where the business part that he had, plus the
detail management.
Detail.
Were you always involved in the business from the get-go, or were you So it was always a family operation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would be the one that would tell them, you can't keep spending money like that. You have to bring some in before you can spend it. Oh, well, those were the days.
and the dance of marriage.
Yes.
That takes place.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
And then we started having children, you know, like 4 and 5 years. So I was busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're having kids. So mm-hmm. when the kids, I'm curious how you managed this, because in some respects this seems to me like everything that would have been common for your families going back centuries, because if you're agriculture or something like that, this is usually a family operation. Mm-hmm. And it's all, as it were, all hands on deck. But then, you know, you open a small business and it's all hands on deck. And yet I'm assuming you had primary responsibility for the nurture of your children.
I did.
And so, mm-hmm. Okay.
They never had daycare. They did have grandparents occasionally.
So how did you do this?
I worked at night a lot.
Mm. Okay.
When we went into the store business, Wally would come home after closing the store at 9, and I would go to the store and do the books and make the deposit and do all of that. And I wouldn't park in that alley on today.
Yeah, it's a little different now.
If you paid me.
Yeah.
But, and then I'd get home around 10:30, and
then you'd have responsibility for the...
Yeah.
For the boys.
Mm-hmm.
When they woke up in the morning and getting them off.
Get everybody off to school. Or, and
so yeah. So when they were little, I assume you're the full-time caregiver in your home.
Mm-hmm.
But so Wally'd come home at the end of the day and you'd trade places after dinner.
Kind of. That's the way it worked, yeah.
Okay.
So by the time Wally got home, were the boys already in bed?
Usually, when they were little, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody was down for the night.
Yeah.
So, and then we outgrew the house, and so we went through we outgrew the first house. We bought a bigger house, and then eventually we built on to that house, and we stayed there until we retired and moved out to Lake Country.
I'm curious how you, and when I'm thinking about you two managing your household, and I'm thinking about the spiritual life of your household, you know, Wally's working long days,
mm-hmm.
And you, for crying out loud, are working long days, but, you know, I'm assuming what is the nighttime ritual? What is the passing on of the faith look like when your kids are little?
Well, once the children started school, then we had we would always have evening devotions after dinner.
Okay. And how did you do your evening devotions?
We had a book from, I think it was from school.
Sure.
That I used as a guide.
Okay.
And when they got a little older, then I put some of the responsibility on them,
uh-huh.
that they had to come up with, like the devotion for the night, or we would talk about what happened during the day and how it applied to what they were learning in school and how life was going at home.
Okay.
It didn't seem that hard at the time, but I was tired after
They were gone?
A few years, yes.
Yeah, well, I would imagine.
We had always wanted 6 children, and we had 4. And I said, I can't. No more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a very busy time. And the kids were very involved in grade school.
Where did they go to school?
They went to Pilgrim Grade School, and then they went to Milwaukee Lutheran.
Okay.
And once they were all, we had three kids at Milwaukee Lutheran at one time.
Yep.
Tuition
also expensive.
Tuition was not what it is now.
Right.
And you got a discount on the second and third child.
But even so, you had skin in the game. It wasn't a public school, so you had to.
You were paying for their education mm-hmm. to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But we as a whole family were very involved, constantly in church and school. Once we had children,
and that was all at St. James.
No, we turned to Pilgrim.
You were at Pilgrim
when
okay.
Ruth had when she started school, because their school, first of all, it was farther away.
What's the order of your kids? Go top to bottom.
Ruth, Paul, Robert, David.
Oh, that's right. Ruth was first. Ruth,
yes.
Paul, Robert.
So 52, 54, David. 55, 57. Graduated in 71, 72, 73, 75.
And she remembers it. That's
right.
That's
the
business manager.
Yes.
Ladies mm-hmm. and gentlemen.
That's the lady that always wanted to be a secretary. Right, and organize things.
It was great. I mean, we were so fortunate that we had a good home school, home church relationship with our congregation and mm-hmm. and the school and the teachers, and that the kids were not the hardest to raise.
Something to be thankful for.
Except the one that kept a messy death.
No, which one was that?
That was Robert.
Robert.
And
he became a pastor.
Robert, the messy desk pastor?
Well, but he was an accountant for 15 years
oh,
first.
That's right.
Really? Okay.
Then he went to SEM.
Yeah.
When he had two children and had the calling that he had to be a pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm, curious. We're gonna end up just afield. but what's for you? You know, we're talking about raising your kids in the faith, and I'm getting a feel for how disciplined you especially had to be. What are the top couple things that formed you spiritually that you can think of, in terms of deepened your faith in Christ?
Well, just being a part of the Christian family and knowing all these people that you were dealing with were also Christians.
Yeah.
And they were all in the same boat that you were. And we all were having children at the same time and having them in school, and we just being so active in, like, Ladies' Aid choir.
Sure.
I think I've sung in choirs since I was that big. And then a lot of other things outside. I mean, I belong to the Lutheran Radio Choir and TMJ for over 25 years. When I think, was 25 years? It just seemed like a blip in my life. But lots of years of serving that way and in Ladies' Aid. And
I'm curious what you think about this statement. As I'm thinking about you helping to manage that business and your four kids, I've often said to myself and others that there's nothing quite like having children for recognizing your own sinfulness
mm-hmm.
and the need for God's mercy. Does that resonate with you?
And forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. He just He was just a part of the family. God was.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that I was getting that across to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I made it.
Well, one of them became a pastor.
Yes.
Right? And you have another son. That's
so at least one of them got it.
Yes. Took him a while. He liked numbers, just like his mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and another one is involved in a big parachurch ministry, mm-hmm, for many, many years, right?
Yeah. They started with Campus Crusade, and now they're with their own individual ministries down in Oklahoma.
Sure.
They're still very active.
Yeah.
And David never showed any interest in that, although he was the one that wanted to make it to Broadway.
Yeah.
He got to New York, but he didn't quite make Broadway.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Is he still performing?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. He never quite had it. He did some shows. He still writes parodies for things, and he plans things that need organization.
Theatrical things.
Theatrical type,
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
And he has theatrical friends.
Yeah.
But he works in an office to get...
To pay the bills.
To, yeah.
Yeah.
Buy potatoes, right?
To buy potatoes.
Sounding like my Irish ancestors there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's grab the next big thing. So one is the firstborn American, firstborn in your family. Two is you married Wally.
Mm-hmm.
And the propensity that Wally had for wanting to own and operate his own business and, mm-hmm, all that came along with that, and the family that comes along. What's the next big thing that shaped you into who you are?
I don't think there was any next.
Well,
we finally retired.
Okay.
And came out here.
And
what? How old were you?
Yeah.
When you guys retired and moved
60,
to the boonies in Lake Country?
Yeah. 60-something. It was, when did we retire? 92.
And how long ago, was it that Wally died?
He died in 18. So
was it 18?
7 years.
Okay, mm-hmm. It's been 7 years now.
Yeah.
And so he was how old?
88 or 89.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Before we started recording, you were telling us that you were just short of 69 years?
68, because he died in 18 and we were married in 50.
50. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it, just short of 68.
It would have been
68 years.
In June. He died in May.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So 67 years and 10 months.
Yeah.
11 months.
11 months.
Of married life,
mm-hmm,
to one guy.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't all that bad.
Pastor Shackman, how much time do we have? I have a question related.
We are going to be right up against it. But
can I ask her the marriage question?
You go right ahead.
So this, this is November. We have our, I think it's our 10th. Annual now, St. Paul's Biblical Marriage Retreat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, after 67, almost 68 years of marriage, and it's been, what, 7 years you said as a, widowed now.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number one factor for a successful marriage?
Patience. Much. Patience, being willing to accept other people's ideas, and just really loving each other, I guess, is the feeling that you didn't think you could do it without them. Mm. But I guess I learned you can since I've been doing it now for seven years.
Once that vocation comes upon you, mm-hmm. You didn't have any choice in the matter.
Right. She answered that without hesitation.
Really without hesitation. So let me ask you then a difficult question. Assuming Wally would say the same thing, what did he especially have to be patient with you about? You don't have to answer that question.
I guess just putting up with me. But he was pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that this morning. I was up early doing my devotions.
4 o'clock.
I got up at 3:45 today.
Do you have chickens?
No.
There's the quote of the day.
He just gets up that early.
I just got up. I've discovered that for me to be, I have to take a slow start to the day. I journal some, just kind of do a brain dump on paper. I now include at least 10 minutes of kind of reading some golf book because in
which I don't mind at all, because then he tells me what he learns.
Oh, yeah,
it's great.
But then I get into my Christian meditation stuff. But I was just thinking again, you know, in our pastoral work, we've got a marriage retreat coming up, which is for the most part couples who are doing okay and wanting to do better. But we've also had some challenging marital situations recently that, you know, we've had to deal with as pastors, and that's hard, you know, because we're often not the first people to hear. We're often next to the last. Yeah. But it's marriage is so Christ-like in its calling. You know, that when you take your vows, it's a call to submit and to serve. And I think for most of us, the vast majority of us, we mean every word we say, and we have absolutely no idea what we're getting into. No idea what's going to happen. And the Lord, you know, like, mm-hmm. it was interesting to hear you say that regarding widowhood. You know, well, I didn't know that I could do it, but now that I can. And so much of marriage is like that, you know, and when you enter, I would imagine, and Mimi, we could probably spend an hour talking about this. I would imagine in the midst of those years when the kids are little and you're, you know, and Wally comes home and you eat and you do your devotions and then you switch places and then you're off. I would imagine that there was some communication that maybe didn't happen when you're passing.
Oh, probably.
You know, and that's mm-hmm. challenging. And you have to be patient with one another, and you have to learn to forgive one another, mm-hmm. and you have to learn in you know, all of a sudden I suspect real great frustrations come up. And then the Lord has a way of reminding you, no, I remember I called you to this.
You're right.
Be faithful.
Mm-hmm. She just says, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as a guy who, you know, had the privilege of being the pastor to both of you for a time, we're super thankful. And I want to hand this over to Pastor Shockman to give his thanks for you about Sundays, because I've had the pleasure of longer, but it was my honor to be pastor to both of you, and it's also our honor to be pastor to you in your widowhood. And you give some special gifts to us, and I'll let him do that.
You sit right up front, and you pay attention with all that you got, and it's apparent as we step into the pulpit or as we stand behind the altar, that as we speak God's word, you are eager to hear it. And that is a joy for us to watch.
Well, and you give a sermon, you both give sermons that make you think. after you've left church.
Thanks. That's a pretty high compliment.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
And so, you know who really has pointed that out to me is David. When he comes, he said, I can't wait
to your son.
Hear a sermon by one of you guys. He said, there's always something to think about afterwards. And that's what I enjoy about it. And Vicki and I talk about it on the way home sometimes.
Vicki's your friend who, and also your kind of Uber driver.
Yes, my Uber driver.
Vicki, who needs to come sit down and have this conversation.
Yeah, we need to have a conversation mm-hmm. with Vicki Tudor as well.
Yeah. She's a great gal, and we're enjoying our time together.
That's what she said. We talked to her the other day. You know, she said, I can't make Bible class, but I get to, because I'm taking Mimi home, but it's the greatest. I get to spend an hour with you. So, yeah. You're like schoolgirls, you two.
Yeah. it's just amazing what we have found in common. And we've both been through losing a husband, and I had more children than she did, but it's just been such an interesting person to meet.
And along the way, again, we find Christ in all things. As he knits together you and Vicki as confidants and friends, although perhaps a generation apart from one another. And yet, you just enjoy each other's company so much because you share Christ, because you share that same patience and forgiveness and joy in the forgiveness of sins and the life that we have together in him. Pastor O'Donnell, you grabbed your Bible and flipped it open immediately to where you knew you wanted to go.
Well,
so where'd you go?
Mimi made reference to this earlier, but we just kept circling around it mm-hmm. for the past hour. Mm-hmm. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 7. Love and 8. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. The love of Christ never ends. Thanks a bunch for being our partner in this. God bless you.
You're very welcome. I have enjoyed it.
For show notes and other information about Christ in All Things, visit ChristInAllThings.org. Comments may be emailed to comments@ChristInAllThings.org.
We're thankful to provide Christ in All Things to you as a gift,
but it's not free to produce and distribute.
So, if you'd like to help make the show self-supporting and have a little fun in the process, please click the support page at ChristInAllThings.org.
A donation of any kind gets you a righteous,
environmentally friendly Christ in All Things straw
for the useful but perhaps pretentious beverage container that so many of us like to use.
A donation of $200 or more will get you some cheerful on-air clapping. And a pair of excellent Wisconsin-made wigwam hiking socks.
A donation of $1,000 or more gets you thunderous on-air clapping. And an elegant Christ in All Things leather folio, handmade by the artisans of the Murdy Creative Company.
If you want to donate more than that, fly us wherever you want, and we'll record Christ in All Things with you at your chosen location, within reason, of course.
All post-production surplus supports youth ministry at St. Paul's. Thank you for your support.
Christ in All Things is a production of St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 210 East Pleasant Street in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. For more information about St. Paul's, visit splco.org, email us at info@splco.org, or call us at 262-567-5001. Intro and outro music, setting by Joseph Hurl. Copyright 1998, Concordia Publishing House, used with permission.